Okay. So it's 11:15. For this next session, we wanted to just cover Q&A. For Peter and Elton, will be coming over here. But we have Muki, who's joined us. He used to be one of you. we're basically in this session want to cover any questions you have on codecs, issues you may have with that, and go over that. Yesterday we talked a little bit about all the different codecs that are required for each RDP implementation, and so we want to basically cover any questions specific to the codecs. But before I, we covered this slide with all the different codecs that are available. Oh, it's not working. I wanted to make sure that I cover the H.264. So yesterday, when we talked about H.264, one thing that I actually should have pointed out, and I'll point out now, is the fact that the color conversion, so I added actually one bullet there. So the color conversion that is required for the H.264 mixed mode is actually BT709, and it needs to actually be full range. Certain hardware decoders may actually not necessarily have this default in there, so you will have to actually make some modifications there. So I wanted to make sure that I point that out. So ensure that you have support for that, because otherwise you will not end up with the same colors on the client side. That could actually lead to some color differences. So that's actually the main thing that I wanted to point out for this session. So as mentioned, this is more of a Q&A session. Other than the two slides that we had here. Are there any questions that you guys have on codecs in particular, or maybe issues you ran into? I also want to invite Peter up as well, who just came in. Hi. If you have any questions for codecs, Peter and Muki are here also to help answer those questions. If there's no questions, then. Here we go. Okay.
It's about the progressive codecs.
Yes.
Is it working? Is it on?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah? Okay.
It's actually about the progressive codecs. A colleague of mine who implemented that stuff observed at the moment we render all the progressive stuff into one big frame buffer.
Yes.
And there are the region information which needs to be updated on the screen.
Yes.
If you don't do this within the with using this extra buffer, you get fragments on the screen that are displayed wrongly. So it seems there are parts of the tiles, if you render these, which are not have the right content, it seems.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
You have to assume that everything that is outside of the region that you get. Mm-hmm. Can, for I assume optimization purposes, be like left with stale content or old content or something completely different, basically. So you should only trust the content that is within the region. So you you still need to compose everything to the frame buffer you have for the delta updates to work correctly.
Okay.
But then you should only take the content of the region that you get and put that onto the display and not the whole thing, because stuff that's outside of the region might just be old or completely wrong.
Okay. Yeah.
Any other question? Okay.
All right. Hi, this would be a implementation question around H.264. I think there's lots of software solutions available that would meet the baseline profile requirements and stuff you guys mentioned here. But in looking at this, a challenge that I've seen is getting actual hardware offload on a lot of platforms. I don't know if there's any comments you could make on which APIs that are available on a variety of platforms could be used for hardware offload for your requirements here.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't specifically implement H.264 in our clients, so I'm not an expert on that one. However, I have recently done some work with H.264 hardware decode. And especially on like mobile devices, I can say that the starting with iOS 8, the iOS devices work really well, actually. On Windows, I think you get the through the Media Foundation pipeline, you get support for H.264 hardware decoding if the device has it present. So there, it's actually transparent. You can just you get a fallback software solution there okay. Transparently. So as for the full range color conversion, I know that at least on iOS you can specify that you want full range color conversion. So or you can also do the color conversion afterwards. So you can actually have the hardware decoder give you YUV output. And then you can, so in one specific project, we do this with an OpenGL shader, GLES shader. And then, of course, you can use the color conversion matrix and coefficients and everything in the way you need it.
Okay. So generally using the video toolbox, probably?
Pardon?
The video toolbox API, probably?
Yes, okay. The video toolbox API is the one that you'll be looking for. One interesting fact that I discovered that I just want to throw out there is that the Video Toolbox API actually exists since iOS 6, but has been a hidden internal API for iOS 6 and 7, and has been made public with iOS 8, which means that contrary to other new APIs, a program that's compiled with the iOS 8 SDK against the Video Toolbox actually runs on iOS 6 and on iOS 7 devices. It does not crash with undefined symbols or something like that. The caveat is not all of the old devices actually have all of the codecs available. So I found that, for example, H.264 works on some devices with iOS 7, but not others. But H.263, for example, works on almost all devices. So presumably because Apple just added new hardware to their devices over time, and once they had full H.264 support across the whole product range, opened up their video toolbox or something like that. I don't know.
Okay,
and
thank you.
It depends also very much sort of on the devices that that also what sort of hardware is included in the devices and what sort of support that is. I think actually one of the other things too, so for H.264, so currently we're actually using it so for the mix mode on the Windows RT devices, and then the video support, like the separate virtual channel, that's actually used on the Windows clients as well. On Android currently, and iOS, we don't have that acceleration. But.
Thank you.
When it comes to H.264 and Windows 10 and going forward, do you see the entire screen being taken over and run through the H.264 codec, or do you see kind of a mixed mode where you have some progressive in there and some clear codec, et cetera?
So basically what we did for the current protocol documentation that we have out there, so what we documented out there is that we have this two-stream H.264 solution. So as mentioned, we're basically there's definitely a bunch of changes happening, so don't get too focused on that particular part of the documentation. But basically, in essence, for that mode, it's basically full H.264. So that's in general direction, but So right now we have the H.264 mixed mode, which is the clear codec plus the H.264. Actually, let me pull up the slide. Oop. Did my laptop decide to not?
It's not reacting.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, so basically right now the current mode is basically the mixed mode that we have. So obviously that will continue to be supported in the next versions. And to make sure that we have backward compatibility with clients. So that is actually the mode that we offer today. And then, as I mentioned, so what we've documented in the protocol documentation basically sort of guides more on the direction that we're going. So anyway, we're making changes right now, so obviously things could change. So as is always with beta, so I make that sort of disclaimer. But in general, that's... definitely, I recommend to look at utilizing and leveraging H.264 for a decode with sort of the H.264 AVC features that we currently offer in the product. Any other questions?
Let me go back to the progressive codec. There's a context for the decoding or for the...
Yes.
Yeah. We rarely see that there's more than one context, but sometimes there is. What are the reasons for multiple contexts on...
To be honest, I don't know. I only know progressive from the client side. So, as you say, there's usually only one context. This is a decoder-specific feature, and I don't know why it was implemented the way it was implemented. So, yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? Maybe some other questions about clients, since just in general, like any other components technologies? Yeah. Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's what I'm here for. I'm trying to get all the answers.
Again, the context. I think the documentation is not very clear about what is part of the context. Is it?
In our implementation, we put everything as part of a context. So basically, the whole copies of the coefficients or the, you know, things you compute your delta from, I store all of those within the context. So each context has its own complete set of back buffer, old coefficients, state, and just everything, actually. And
okay, so not just only the tables for computing, so also the frame buffer is doubled.
Exactly. I just copy the whole frame buffer, basically, for each context. And that seems to work out fine. So it might be... overkill. I have never really analyzed it, but since it's usually only one context, it doesn't seem to be much overhead, and it just works that way. So, and yeah, as you say, it's not exactly specified. So, but I can try and find out for you if you want. So
that would be great, actually. Yeah,
sure.
Because on thin clients, there's not always much RAM available. And another frame buffer hurt.
Yes, that's definitely clear. On like an iOS device, we have a little bit more leeway when it comes to memory. So, I'll find that out, actually, and also why there sometimes are two contexts and what exactly does that mean. Okay.
But have you ever seen more than two contexts?
I don't think so. I mean, I can't remember, but I don't think that I've ever seen more than two. So sometimes there pops up a second one, but in most cases, what I see is that the server creates a context, sends a few updates, and then pretty soon actually closes the context again, creates a new context afterwards, which might have a different ID, but there's only usually one in parallel. So I'll have to see. Maybe actually... the fact that there are two is actually some kind of degenerate case or something when from the server decoder or something like that. I'll look into it and, you know, I'll try to come up with an answer.
That would be great. Yeah, thank you.
Other questions? Actually, one more thing. I'm not sure if I covered that yesterday too. So column number 7, right? Like, so if you're implementing the H.264 mix mode, I just want to make sure that also the server actually, when it needs to fall back for some reason, like that either doesn't, for example, have the H.264 encoder available because it relies on the H.264 codex being available, then in that case, you would have to actually make sure that you either support the progressive Callisto codec or the Callisto codec that was shipped with Windows 7 SP1 and 2008 R2, because that then enables your client basically to fall back, or actually the server to fall back, so that you can actually still have a connection with that that RDP server. So I actually want to make sure that that is clear as well, that that you not just implement the H.264 mix mode for RDP 8.1 and then sort of not have fallback capability to the progressive or Callisto. I know that most of you have implemented it, either one of those codecs, but so with the capabilities negotiation, that's where you sort of can indicate what sort of the codecs that you do support on the client. So any other questions on progressive Callisto 264?
Yeah. Can we comment on what we'd like to see, like in your codecs?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, sure. I was happy to hear feedback.
The feedback I've got is, RDP8 uses a way a lot more memory for caching and everything than previous codecs. Mm-hmm. So if you have a machine you want to run like hundreds of sessions, then that becomes a problem. Or if you're on a low-end device, you may not want to use that much memory in certain cases. But there's no way to really disable like high memory usage with the latest RDP8 codecs, because you don't really have much control over what's going to be used in the end. It's very hard to negotiate a very specific codec with the way the flags currently work. You cannot disable a clear codec in all cases. It may happen. It actually happens, always makes. So yeah, if there was a way to make it work in an uncached mode for certain cases, I'd be happy.
I kind of agree with you on that side. With prior to the new graphics pipeline, the cache size was controlled by the client. The client actually specified how many cache slots it has available. Whereas with the new cache, actually the cache size is, well, you have two different sizes, but the first one is too small and the second one is too big, so actually makes sense to have it client controlled again, so kind of.
Yeah, so currently the only one who have the small cache was 16 and the other one is 100 from the top of my head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I remember at least, yeah. Then there are some additional caches that you have to take care of because you have a 16 megabyte cache, but then you have
the clear codec cache,
off-screen surfaces and stuff like that. So they take up quite a lot of memory, actually. So or can take up quite a lot of memory, and you can't control those either because they are fixed at like at least 10 slots or something like that. So. Okay.
That's good.
Oh, and maybe other comment. It'd be interesting to see more improvements into the lossless mode. Okay. Because right now the only thing you can do with lossless is the planar codec, which dates back to RDP6. But I guess in certain environments, like medical environments, where you need to actually have all the pixel value, and you cannot like lose part of it because you may miss like cancer cells or something, it'd be interesting to see some improvements or efforts done in doing good lossless compression.
Yeah. Okay. Last for a feedback.
Can you speak a little bit about which versions of which operating systems can take advantage of GPU and hardware acceleration? I remember when 8.1 came out, there was some questions around whether RDSH could take advantage of a GPU, et cetera, and I wonder if any of that is changing.
Okay. So right now, as far as like GPU acceleration, obviously we have the Remote FX vGPU feature, which is applicable to Hyper-V and running with Windows Client Enterprise. So Enterprise Client is actually, that's Q, is the one that supports the GPU acceleration. Then if you look at physical systems, so we have with Windows Client, when you actually directly connect to a host, when you connect directly to a desktop or a workstation. We do actually have some acceleration available in the session, but it's basically a little bit mileage may vary because of the fact that it's just specific to DX. So it depends a little bit on the applications. We have a group policy that enables the GPU acceleration on RDSH. And it's actually basically the same policy that is enabled by default on workstations. But the for RDSH, again, because it's sort of like a little bit application dependent, therefore mileage may vary, so customers should test with that. So as far as that acceleration, actually that group policy was enabled in Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8. So it's been in there since that time. There are also some efforts that certain graphics vendors have ensued where they now actually support also some of the direct support for some of the acceleration, like for example with OpenGL. So that's specific to the video vendors. So that's actually sort of like what GPU acceleration is currently available. I don't know if I missed anything, but yeah, I think that's...
Is there a difference in terms of the codecs that are used when you have a full screen desktop session or when you have a remote app session?
Yes, so actually, no, there's the same codecs being used. So if you're doing an RDP8 session, for example, and you are using remote app in that session, you're using progressive. It's basically the same sort of codecs applied to that. The only one that actually sort of here, the exception is the H.264, because we basically listed the advanced, right, there's sort of two differences here. So you have the standard remote app, which is the last row that is green, so with all the yeses there. Mm-hmm. That's sort of standard remote app. It's like the immersive experience. And then you have the remote effects, advanced remote effects graphics, which is actually the one that enables, like, for example, the preview on the taskbar. And so there's a couple of additional features that we introduced. If you're actually running in that mode, then it's only Progressive Callista that we support in that mode. So let's say you're as a thin client, you only support the Callista codec, so the RDP7.1 codec, and you're supporting H.264, then at that point you can't use the advanced remote effects graphics channel. Now, realistically speaking, that sort of is really applicable to like a Windows desktop or a Mac desktop, for example, because it's obviously the integration with the local OS. But that's actually the one thing to actually note. Like, there's a difference there.
Okay.
There's something I really want to see if it's possible, but it'd be to make the RDP8 graphics pipeline extensible by third parties. By that I mean that we probably have an API on the server side to inject our own encoders, mm-hmm. and on the client side, we just provide our own decoders. Stuff like passing PNGs or JPEGs would be great. Wouldn't be too hard to implement. It just looks like it's just I like the way it's being structured. It's very generic. If we could just extend the protocol a bit to add certain messages for negotiating custom codecs and add an API on the server side, there's a lot that could be done, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we currently don't have that capability. Perfect. Yep. Thank you for.
RDP8 includes a provision for alpha channel in all of its codecs, but it's never used in RDP8. Is that going to change, or is it still true with RDP10 and going forward?
The alpha channel?
Alpha channel in the
it
data.
It is actually used, it is only used
for the advanced remote app.
Here, with the advanced remote app, the alpha channel is actually used if the window on the host has actual alpha information, like it has is a semi-transparent window or something like that, the alpha channel will actually be used so that this composes correctly on the client. In all other scenarios, the alpha channel actually doesn't make any sense because it doesn't apply.
And so it's usually empty. The alpha channel is MS Office and the shadow around it.
Sorry. The other example is the Office, like Word or Excel, and the shadow around the window. That's actually using an alpha channel in that mode. And otherwise, it falls back into drawing rectangles that are full color and not drawing the correct shadow.
So it's really only used for compositing in the remote alpha?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes, technically.
More or less, yeah.
More or less, yes. You would need a very special application on the host side that you use with advanced Grail, like a skinned media player or something like that.
So for example, that shadow is...
To be able to, you know, do it, to be able to use it for something. The alpha channel is not meant to, say, blend one update with another update that has come before it or something like
right,
that.
Right, that's where I was worried about implementing at some point. Was it doesn't spell out in the spec how it's going to be used. It's just there.
Yeah, and no, that's not what it's meant for. So it really is in all the other scenarios except the advanced rail, you can just assume that the alpha channel is actually zero, or just ignore it completely and ignore it.
Yeah, you could, for instance, blend surfaces together and all those other things, but if it's never used, then I'm
not
going to write
the code.
Yeah,
no, it's not used. Okay. It's not used.
Just a tiny comment, but an easy I guess that now with Advanced Remote App, when you start Visual Studio, the splash screen is actually non-rectangular, and that one wasn't the thing which was obvious with the older remote app. You had like this big black box around it.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be like primary use case.
Yeah, for example, that's how it's used, but yes. It is only for composition so that the windows turn out right.
Got one more comment. Marc-André did a comment earlier on codecs, and I've got one also, and that is if you get to the point where you're designing some more codecs, it looks to me a lot of times like the codecs were designed for maximum compression, and whoever did the design review wasn't really thinking about, well, how's this going to be implemented? So there's a lot of places where, for instance, Clear Codec, because it's caching things by its little cursor and everything, you cannot do multiple Clear Codec regions in parallel on a system that has multiple processors because everything is so cached. So that might be something to look at if you get into the point where you are designing another codec to add to the set, is how easy is it to optimize on a client to make it run in parallel or make it run with SIMD, et cetera.
We are aware of that problem, now more so that we have multiple, more different clients on different platforms. And these are decisions that are definitely going into the next iteration of RDP and where we're looking into, you know, making stuff easier for clients, better optimized and stuff like that.
Just make a note, make sure that's a capture. Any other questions? Obviously, we'll be around and can ask questions one-on-one. So, okay, then I think we'll lunch, I think is already ready out there. So we can, so folks attending, like, can start to have lunch. I think it's all set up. And then, we have then the evening event. That's next up. Tomorrow we'll have a Q&A session tomorrow afternoon, and then we have the company store visit. So this basically wraps up, concludes the presentations for the Plugfest.